intended for listeners who are blind, have low vision, or have another print disability, which makes reading, holding a book, or turning a page difficult or impossible. The content is copyrighted by the respective publishers. For more information, please visit us on the web at nfradioreading.org.
Hello, this is Corrine, and for the next hour, I'll be reading from the December 8th, 2025 issue of the Wall Street Journal on the Niagara Frontier Radio Reading Service. Thank you for joining us today. The highlights under business and finance are: American households are nearing the end of the year, feeling a lot more dour about the economy than they did at the beginning, even as they keep spending. Trump said Netflix's deal to acquire Warner Brothers could be a problem because of the market share the buyer would gain, signaling possible resistance to the sale. IBM is in advanced talks to buy data infrastructure company Confluent for about $11 billion. Target is testing new fulfillment models for overnight delivery of online orders as the retailer works to reverse a years-long sales slump. AI job losses are coming, even the most upbeat tech executives say, but they differ on which roles are most likely to be overtaken. Meta Platform said it bought Limitless, a maker of wearable artificial intelligence devices. Ad spending will grow more than predicted in 2025 because tariffs didn't take as big a bite as expected, and AI provided a boost, a new forecast from WPP Media projects. The Defense Department is looking to private investment and startups to close a gap with China and Russia in hypersonic weapons. The Transportation Department waived an $11 million payment imposed on Southwest Airlines related to its 2022 holiday meltdown. Now for the key articles under the Worldwide section. Trump's firing spree at federal agencies has snowballed into a Supreme Court showdown about how modern American government should work with the independence of experts at stake. The Ukraine war derailed Russia's once lofty ambitions for artificial intelligence as the U.S. and China race to dominate the technology and other countries build out infrastructure. Defense Secretary Hegseth defended the U.S. military's decision to kill two survivors of a lethal strike in the Caribbean in a follow-up attack on the capsized boat. Thailand said its aircraft struck military targets in Cambodia after renewed clashes along the country's disputed border. Chinese warplanes locked radar on Japanese military aircraft in the seas near Okinawa, in incidents Tokyo said were dangerous acts. America's cost of living concerns have spurred a White House-wide bid to change Trump's messaging on the economy, with a view to the president's and the GOP's popularity. A group of top Trump advisors convened to tackle soaring beef prices as efforts are stepped up to wrangle food inflation. Trump criticized Henry Cuellar after the indicted congressman from Texas he pardoned last week filed for re-election as a Democrat. The government's pause on all asylum applications for Afghans comes close to shutting down any remaining pathway to the U.S. for its Afghan wartime allies and their dependents. The picture on today's front page shows three elderly veterans with leis around their necks looking skyward. And the headline, Veterans Remember the Pearl Harbor Attack. The caption, Tragic Day. World War II veterans Leon Amstead, Robert Hartline, and Milton Ripple are pictured before the 84th Pearl Harbor Remembrance Day ceremony on Sunday in Honolulu. None of the dozen remaining survivors of the attack attended. The article, U.S. Remembers Pearl Harbor. Pearl Harbor Remembrance Day on Sunday marked the 84th anniversary of the Japanese aerial assault on the U.S. naval base in Hawaii in 1941, which killed 2,403 and catapulted the U.S. into World War II. A total of 350 Japanese aircraft flew from six naval carriers positioned offshore and destroyed a large part of the U.S. Pacific Fleet. The U.S. and the U.K. declared war on Japan the next day. Survivors of the Japanese bombing have long been the center of the remembrance ceremony held each year on the military base's waterfront. But today, only 12 are still alive. All are centenarians. And this year, none were able to make the pilgrimage to Hawaii to mark the event. That means no one attending would have had firsthand memories of having served during the attack. As the survivors fade from the scene, their descendants and the public increasingly are turning to other ways to learn about the bombing. The U.S. Navy and the National Park Service hosted Sunday's ceremony. American consumers sour on the economy's trajectory. Sentiment nears record lows on jobs, tariffs, inflation, but spending continues. By Chow Deng. American households are nearing the end of the year feeling a lot more dour about the economy than they did at the beginning, even as they keep spending. High prices, a fragile job market, and anxiety about President Trump's tariffs have helped drag consumer sentiment, as measured by the University of Michigan, down near historic lows this year. The latest numbers were slightly improved from a previous reading, freighted by government shutdown disruptions, but barely. People are not feeling confident about the economy, said Joanne Chu, who directs the University of Michigan's surveys of consumers. Americans are still looking back to prices they paid before the COVID-19 pandemic and struggling to digest the increases since then. The surveys are only one view of economic conditions, but they offer a consistent check of consumers' changing mood. Economists and analysts look at the results to help monitor and forecast the health of the economy. The closely watched sentiment survey asks people how they feel now and down the road about their own financial situation and the economy as a whole. Those responses are then baked into an equation that produces a number ranging from 2 to 150.2. Higher numbers reflect a rosier outlook. The survey shows that the nation started the year in relatively decent spirits about the economy, with a reading above 70 in January. Nearly a year later, a preliminary monthly reading released in early December showed sentiment slightly above 53. Court to eye vast firing power for president. Justices are poised to strip agencies' broad job projections in an ex-FTC official's case. By James Ramesser. Washington. President Trump's firing spree at federal agencies has snowballed into a Supreme Court showdown over how modern American government should work. Dangling by a thread is the tradition that certain sensitive policy details, from regulating nuclear reactors to setting safety standards for consumer products, should be managed by bipartisan panels of technocrats whose jobs are insulated from political pressure. In its place, the High Court appears poised to enshrine a competing view championed by Trump, that presidents must have the power to dismiss any of these unelected experts for any reason or no reason at all. That is the only way, proponents say, to cut red tape and ensure that regulators remain accountable to voters. This case is at the heart of two conflicting visions for the presidency and how the government operates generally, said Ian Werman, an expert on administrative and constitutional law at the University of Minnesota. Given what we know of the justices' prior views and decisions, it would be surprising if they didn't rule in favor of robust presidential control of the administrative state. The court will hear arguments Monday in the case of Rebecca Slaughter, a Democratic member of the Federal Trade Commission fired by Trump in March. The justices are considering what might seem like a technical issue involving the constitutionality of the longstanding federal laws that restrict the president's ability to fire the leaders of independent agencies, including the FTC, the National Labor Relations Board, and the Consumer Product Safety Commission. But the court's answer, expected by July, will matter far beyond the job security of bureaucrats at the boards and commissions with an alphabet soup of initials. A broad victory for Trump will allow him to intensify his mission of directing those agencies to implement his deregulatory agenda, advance his political aims, and even pursue retribution against his foes. It is all part of what conservative legal scholars call the unitary executive theory, the notion that the Constitution concentrates all the powers of the executive branch in the hands of a muscular president. Russia struggles in AI race as others pull ahead. By Georgi Kanchev. President Vladimir Putin has often proclaimed that Russia must lead the world in artificial intelligence. In reality, the country is stuck on the sidelines as others pull ahead. As the U.S. and China race to dominate AI models and applications, and countries in Europe and the Middle East pour resources into building computing infrastructure, the Ukraine war has derailed Russia's once lofty ambitions. On the Russian language version of LM Arena, where users rate AI models, the top-performing Russian model ranks 25th, trailing behind even older iterations of ChatGPT and Google's Gemini. According to Stanford University's Global AI Vibrancy Tool, which was released in November and measures the strength of countries' AI ecosystems, Russia ranks 28th out of 36 countries. You are listening to a reading of articles and features from the Wall Street Journal on the Niagara Frontier Radio Reading Service. When self-defense kills bystanders, laws protect shooters who accidentally kill while lawfully defending themselves. By Mark Miramont. Kenneth Santana Rodriguez brought along his 9mm handgun on a pedicure date with a woman at A Touch of Beauty nail salon in Holyoke, Mass. They were sitting side by side when the father of the woman's child burst into the salon, demanding to know the nature of their relationship. Santana Rodriguez told police the man raised his shirt to reveal a firearm and said, "You know what's about to happen." Santana Rodriguez pulled out his 9mm and shot twice. "It was him or me," he told police. Yet he missed his intended target, Irving Sanchez. One bullet instead struck the chest of an employee who had been working on the woman's toenails, killing Trung Michael Tran, 33 years old. Prosecutors filed a charge of first-degree murder against Santana Rodriguez. In October, his lawyers won a victory in the state's highest court. A defendant's lawful self-defense against an assailant may excuse the killing of an unintended victim, such as an innocent bystander, the Massachusetts Supreme Judicial Court ruled, joining the list of states with similar protections under self-defense laws or other precedent-setting court decisions. Amid a rise in self-defense homicides across the U.S., there also has been a toll on bystanders killed by stray gunfire. Often, prosecutors don't file homicide charges in those cases. Many grieving families, angry that nobody is being held to account for the loss of their loved one, are left to try to seek a measure of justice in civil courts. The 2023 nail salon murder case against Santana Rodriguez, who held a gun permit, remains open. In returning the case to the trial court, the state Supreme Court said a defendant who acted in lawful self-defense could still be convicted of a lesser charge of involuntary manslaughter if they were reckless in the killing of a bystander. Prosecutors haven't yet said how they will proceed. Hypersonic missiles fuel startup boom. Castalion is among those racing to make the U.S. competitive in Mach 5 warfare. By Heather Somerville. The Pentagon is getting serious about hypersonic weapons, a technology that has eluded the U.S. military for decades. It is looking to startups with no experience but billions of dollars backing them to fill a glaring hole in the national arsenal. China and Russia have stockpiles of these long-range, super-fast, maneuverable weapons. The U.S. doesn't, even though officials consider them essential to winning future conflicts. As the Defense Department looks to close that gap, private investment is pouring in, and startups, many of which haven't built hypersonic systems at scale and haven't flown at hypersonic speeds are seeing their valuations soar. The latest is Torrance, California-based Cast Lion, which on Friday said it raised $350 million at a $2.8 billion valuation. The round will fund a build-out of a new manufacturing plant in New Mexico that the company said will, in 2 years, be capable of producing thousands of missiles a year. It built about 50 this year and conducted about 20 tests. Cast Lion's missiles have topped out at 4 times the speed of sound in those tests. The company plans next year to break the Mach 5 threshold that is considered hypersonic. Chief Executive Brian Hargis said it isn't the straightforward engineering of quintupling the sound barrier that has held the U.S. back, but the manufacturing challenge of mass-producing weapons that can do so reliably and economically. That's where the country is woefully behind, Hargis said. And that is the entire reason that we exist. Cast Lion is betting its newfound fortune that it can scale up production of relatively cheap weapons for the Pentagon by 2027, when U.S. officials said China plans to have its military ready for a possible seizure of Taiwan. The U.S. has for decades made sputtering progress on hypersonic weapons development, and the military routinely abandoned projects before they were fielded or produced in large numbers. Last month, a U.S. defense official included hypersonics on a list of 6 critical technologies that would define the future of American military superiority. Ties strike Cambodia as truce crumbles, by Gabriel Steinhauser. Thailand's army said that its aircraft had begun striking military targets in Cambodia after a Thai soldier was killed and several injured in renewed clashes along the country's disputed border. The airstrikes, which began early Monday local time, shattered a July ceasefire agreement between the two Southeast Asian countries brokered by President Trump. That deal ended 5 days of clashes between the Thai and Cambodian militaries that killed around 100 people, although both countries have since accused each other of not sticking to the terms of the deal. On Monday, Thailand and Cambodia blamed each other for restarting the fighting. Thailand's military said 2 of its soldiers were injured Sunday afternoon after coming under small arms fire from Cambodian troops. Later that night, the Thai military said it observed Cambodian troops positioning tanks and rocket launchers along the border and civilians evacuating from the area. Around 7 a.m. local time on Monday, the Thai military said its troops again came under fire in attacks that killed 1 soldier and wounded 4. That firing prompted the airstrikes, the Thai military said. Cambodian military actions posed a direct threat to Thailand's national security, the safety of border area residents, and Thai personnel operating in the region, the Thai Air Force said. The Thais later said a 2nd soldier and a Thai civilian were also killed. Cambodia's defense ministry denied that version of events, calling the Thai reports that Cambodia had fired on troops false news. It said the Thai military had launched an attack following several days of provocations along the border. The renewed fighting comes just over 6 weeks after Trump oversaw the signing of the ceasefire deal in Kuala Lumpur, Malaysia. Chinese jets lock radar on Japanese fighters, by Jason Douglas, Tokyo. Chinese warplanes locked radar on Japanese military aircraft in the seas near the Japanese island of Okinawa on Saturday, in two separate incidents that Tokyo said were dangerous acts. The incidents add to tensions between the two countries as China continues its diplomatic pressure campaign against Japanese Prime Minister Sanae Takaichi. She angered China's ruling Communist Party when she said early in November that an attack on Taiwan could drag Japan into conflict in defense of itself and its allies, which include the U.S. A Chinese J-15 jet fighter that took off from the Chinese Navy's Liaoning aircraft carrier on Saturday locked its radar on a Japanese F-15 that was investigating its presence in the airspace over international waters near Okinawa. Japan's Defense Minister Shinjiro Koizumi said. A second similar incident occurred 2 hours later, Koizumi said, involving a different Japanese plane. Like many countries, Japan conducts air defense identification zone operations to identify aircraft coming close to its airspace. No one was hurt, but Koizumi said Tokyo had lodged a protest with Beijing over the Chinese aircraft's behavior. This radar lock-on incident constitutes a dangerous act that exceeds the scope necessary for the safe flight of aircraft, he said on X. U.S. crackdown risks Afghan wartime allies. The U.S. says it will pause all asylum applications for Afghans. By Suni Engel Rasmussen. When Abdul Malik Wafa scrambled onto an evacuation flight out of Kabul amid the chaotic U.S. withdrawal, he was assured that his newly wed wife, unable to get inside the airport, would be put on a plane as soon as possible. 4 years later, the former NATO air traffic controller is still waiting for her to join him in Pennsylvania. President Trump's immigration crackdown following a deadly shooting in Washington means he will wait indefinitely. Wafa's wife is one of hundreds of thousands of Afghans who, even before an Afghan veteran was charged with opening fire on two National Guard members in the U.S. Capitol, were struggling to make their way to safety in the U.S. They helped the U.S. mission in Afghanistan in one way or another, as interpreters or drivers, or had loved ones who did. Others, like Ramanullah Lakhanwal, the alleged shooter, fought in combat missions against the Taliban and Al-Qaeda. Now the Trump administration has moved to shut down any remaining pathway to America for its Afghan wartime allies and their dependents. The government says it will pause all asylum applications for Afghans, including those qualifying for special immigrant visas. It will reopen cases approved under the Biden administration, potentially stripping residents and green card holders of their legal status. As many as 200,000 people, including the 120,000 the U.S. evacuated in the first airlift out of Kabul in August 2021. Some 265,000 Afghans are still being processed abroad, including about 180,000 in the special immigrant visa pipeline for those who worked for the U.S. government, according to Afghan Evac, a nonprofit working to resettle Afghan nationals. Wafa, now 28, qualified for humanitarian parole, which grants individuals access to the U.S. temporarily for urgent humanitarian reasons, and later received asylum. Late last year, he was told his petition to have his wife join him had been approved. She traveled to Dushanbe, Tajikistan, for an interview with the U.S. Embassy. Then Trump imposed a travel ban on Afghans, and months later, Wafa received an email saying the visa had been denied. His wife still lives with her mother in Helmand province. The Taliban have burned his old house down, he said. I am so scared. After 4 years, they sent me an email without any proper reason, rejecting the visa for a woman at high risk in Afghanistan, Wafa said. She is at risk because of me. You are listening to a reading of articles and features from the Wall Street Journal on the Niagara Frontier Radio Reading Service. From the editorial page, Obamacare is a mecca for fraud. The Minnesota Medicaid grift illustrates how open-ended government welfare can easily become an inducement for fraud. A new Government Accountability Office, GAO, report finds the pandemic-era sweetened Obamacare subsidies are also ripe for gaming. The GAO last fall began an undercover test in which it submitted insurance applications for fictitious individuals to the federal Obamacare exchange and insurance brokers. Nearly all of its invented people were able to enroll in subsidized plans despite submitting false or no records to verify their identities and incomes. Of GAO's 24 applications, 23 were approved. 18 enrollees were still covered as of September, suggesting that the exchange and insurers didn't verify information even after enrollment. The subsidies paid to insurance companies for those 18 applicants totaled more than $10,000 per month, equivalent to a $6,700 annual subsidy for each enrollee. GAO says in some cases, we were not prompted to provide documentation to verify an applicant's identity. No Social Security number? No problem. In another instance, the Obamacare exchange notified us that it had verified the applicant's estimated income based on documentation we submitted. However, we did not submit documentation. In two cases, brokers called the Obamacare Help Center because applicants had submitted invalid Social Security numbers. The center let brokers submit the fraudulent applications anyway. This suggests the Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services, which runs the federal Obamacare exchange, was ignoring fraud. GAO also analyzed enrollment data in 2023 and 2024 for data anomalies. It found more than 29,000 Social Security numbers in 2023 and nearly 68,000 in 2024 that were used to receive more than 1 year's worth of insurance coverage with subsidies in a single year, meaning the same Social Security number was used by more than one person. In 2023, one Social Security number was used to apply for more than 125 policies. Perhaps this was identity theft, but it's also possible brokers submitted fake Social Security numbers to enroll ineligible or phantom people in plans. Brokers earn more in commissions from insurers if they enroll more people in Obamacare. The Justice Department has charged numerous brokers with enrolling people in Obamacare plans or switching them to new plans without their consent. GAO identified at least 30,000 applications in 2023 and 160,000 in 2024 that had likely unauthorized changes by agents or brokers. GAO also found that incomes weren't later verified for enrollees who received $21 billion in subsidies in 2023. That means they might have received bigger subsidies than they were eligible for. The Paragon Health Institute's Brian Blaze has warned that Obamacare's lax verification controls encourage people to understate income to get bigger subsidies. Using Census Bureau data, Mr. Blaze estimates that about 6.4 million people this year were improperly enrolled in subsidized Obamacare plans, costing taxpayers $27 billion. He has also found that about 40% of enrollees in plans fully subsidized by the government filed no medical claims. GAO's report suggests many may not be real people. Others may have employer coverage and been enrolled by brokers without their knowledge. This year's GOP tax bill included modest reforms to prevent Obamacare fraud, such as requiring the exchange to verify Social Security numbers and income data before enrolling applicants in plans. It also requires people to repay the government if their incomes turn out to be higher than what they estimated on their applications. The Congressional Budget Office projected that the tax bill's Obamacare fraud controls could result in about 1 million more people going uninsured. But most aren't eligible for subsidies, and some might not even exist. Democrats want to boost enrollment in Obamacare no matter the cost, because they view the subsidized and regulated plans as a way station to a single-payer system. Senate Minority Leader Chuck Schumer plans to tee up a vote this week to extend the pandemic-era subsidies, which have been an inducement for fraud. Republicans would be wise to remind voters that Democrats sold Obamacare on false premises. Example, it would make health care affordable. Extending the subsidies would perpetuate that fraud. From the opinion pages, Pacific Grove's tax dollars at work. The city council hires a consulting firm to help it figure out how to raise my taxes. By David R. Henderson, Pacific Grove, California. I live in this city of around 15,000. Locals call it America's last hometown, and there's something to that term. People are neighborly, and our crime rate is very low. It isn't quite Andy Griffith's Mayberry, but it isn't far off. Last month, though, Pacific Grove City Council passed a shocking measure that undercuts the warm and fuzzy hometown feeling. The majority approved an expenditure of up to $141,530 for a political consulting firm to help it figure out how to raise taxes. The firm is called Props and Measures, and its proposal isn't exactly subtle. We work with our clients to identify shared community priorities and values, to identify the elements of a successful revenue proposal. We have built community consensus for revenue measures in hundreds of communities throughout our home state of California and many communities across the country. It continues. The partners and consultants at Props and Measures have experience with numerous successful public finance ballot measures that have raised billions of dollars in voter-approved revenue for public programs, services, and facilities. In short, Pacific Grove City Council voted to use our taxes to come up with a strategy to increase our taxes. In its proposal, Props and Measures asks, what are the general parameters in dollars of the tax tolerance among residents right now? In short, how likely are we taxpayers to resist further tax increases? The council is clearly looking for ways to tax us further. There are some legitimate ways to do that. One is for the members to spend their own funds on a campaign and get others who agree with them to spend their money. That's what opponents of higher taxes must do. But the city council is making us pay for their effort to figure out how to make us pay more. That isn't only unfair, it's corrupt. In a 1968 article in the Journal of Law and Economics, James R. Schlesinger, later Defense Secretary under Presidents Richard Nixon and Gerald Ford, and Energy Secretary under Jimmy Carter, wrote, "The tools of politics, which frequently become its objective, is to extract resources from the general taxpayer with minimum offense and to distribute the proceeds among innumerable claimants in such a way as to maximize support at the polls. Politics, so far as mobilizing support is concerned, represents the art of calculated cheating, or more precisely, how to cheat without being really caught. The good news is that the Pacific Grove residents who alerted me to this have caught the cheaters. Is it too late? Time will tell." Mr. Henderson is an emeritus professor of economics at the Naval Postgraduate School, a research fellow with Stanford University's Hoover Institutions, and editor of the Concise Encyclopedia of Economics. You are listening to a reading of articles and features from the Wall Street Journal on the Niagara Frontier Radio Reading Service. Why is autism exploding? Welfare fraud is one reason. Minnesota's example shows that lucrative behavioral therapy is a magnet for scam artists. By Alicia Finley. Diagnosis rates of autism among children have more than tripled over the past 15 years. One reason, which Minnesota's welfare scandal lays bare with shocking details, is Medicaid fraud and abuse. Medicaid pays health care providers big bucks to diagnose and treat children with autism, sometimes tens of thousands of dollars a month for a single child. Yet states rarely verify that kids who are diagnosed actually meet the medical criteria for the disorder, or that they get appropriate treatment from qualified specialists. The result? Children covered by Medicaid or the government-run Children's Health Insurance Program are 2.5 times as likely as those with private coverage to be diagnosed with autism. Many lower-income kids are labeled autistic merely because they have behavioral or developmental problems. In 2014, the Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services began requiring state Medicaid programs to cover autism therapy, such as Applied Behavioral Analysis, or ABA, a technique that uses positive reinforcement to improve social and communication skills. Obamacare plans are also required to cover such therapy as an essential benefit. Previously, the responsibility for providing such treatment fell mainly on public schools. Many lacked the expertise and were happy to shift the cost to federal taxpayers, which cover between 50% and 75% of Medicaid bills for most beneficiaries. Autism Behavioral Services compromise one of the fastest-growing healthcare industries in the United States. The Massachusetts Office of the Inspector General noted last year in an audit of the state's Medicaid program, there is an increased need for vigilance in program integrity to keep pace with the growing number of ABA providers. In Minnesota, the number of autism providers soared 700%, and payments to them increased 3,000% between 2018 and 2023. According to a federal indictment, Asha Farhan Hassan set up the APA therapy provider Smart Therapy, which employed young relatives with no formal education beyond a high school education as behavioral technicians. Ms. Hassan and her business partners allegedly recruited parents by paying them monthly kickbacks of up to $1,500 a child. She worked with a licensed therapist to get the recruited child qualified for autism services. There was no child that Smart Therapy was not able to get qualified for autism services, according to the indictment. She allegedly billed Medicaid for therapy that wasn't provided and paid the kickbacks to parents out of the proceeds. Often, parents threatened to leave Smart Therapy and take their children to other autism centers if they did not get paid higher kickbacks, the indictment alleges. Several larger families left Smart Therapy after being offered larger kickbacks by other autism centers. Ms. Hassan's lawyer has said that she will plead guilty. Federal audits of Medicaid spending on autism therapies in Indiana and Wisconsin have also turned up widespread abuses. Nearly all Medicaid payments were improper or potentially improper, meaning the providers didn't adhere to federal requirements. In Indiana, therapy was provided by staff who did not have the appropriate credentials and to children who did not receive the required diagnostic evaluations or treatment referrals. Kids spent as long as 8 hours a day at treatment centers, missing school. Providers frequently inflated bills, charging Medicaid as much as $256 an hour. Medicaid payments ranged from $2,643 to $28,240 for a single month of therapy for one child. The Wisconsin audit found providers routinely billed for more intensive treatment than they provided, including time when kids were napping or blowing bubbles. Massachusetts audit identified more than 600 instances in which autism providers billed Medicaid for more than 24 hours of service for a patient on a given date. Between 2017 and 2023, Indiana's Medicaid spending on ABA autism therapy increased nearly 30-fold. Nebraska's has surged some 20-fold since 2020. Some autistic kids might have been helped by the therapy, though we have no way of knowing because states don't track their progress. On the other hand, some children might have been incorrectly diagnosed and missed out on valuable learning in classrooms. All of this underlines broader problems with America's social welfare industrial complex. Liberals measure success by how much money is spent rather than outcomes. They accept waste and fraud in welfare because the spending keeps people on the government dole and payroll. Employment and social assistance, the services for the disabled in particular, has notably grown faster than nearly every industry since the pandemic began. Government largesse is making disability and indolence a way of life for too many Americans, including veterans. Spending on veteran disability payments, which is supposed to be limited to disabilities that resulted from military service, has tripled in the past decade. Among the most common disabilities claimed by older veterans are diabetes, hypertension, and loss of erectile power, all common among older men. For politicians trying to reform the veteran disability system and America's other broken entitlement programs can seem like picking up a grenade. Easier to keep the money flowing, even if the spending eventually blows up on taxpayers. From the editorial page, Jimmy Lai's birthday gift to China. On Monday, Jimmy Lai will spend his 78th birthday in a prison cell in Hong Kong. But this year, there is reason to hope that the newspaper owner turned political prisoner could be released. President Trump, who has called for Mr. Lai's release, is set to meet his Chinese counterpart, Xi Jinping, in Beijing in April. The U.S. and China have much to discuss, everything from rare earths and tariffs to Tokyo's public pushback on the Chinese military. But freeing Mr. Lai deserves to be on the agenda if he hasn't been released by then. Mr. Trump can argue that Mr. Lai's imprisonment is a public relations disaster for China, and that he is doing China a favor by helping to resolve the issue. After 5 years in prison, Mr. Lai is an old man with diabetes and in declining health. If Mr. Lai dies in jail, it will be a permanent stain on China. Hong Kong authorities are prickly about all the bad press that their handling of Mr. Lai is generating for China. We know this from the defensive statement the Hong Kong government issued Wednesday that condemns certain media, including agency France Presse, for their fact-twisting reports about Mr. Lai's medical care and overall incarceration. The Hong Kong government followed up Thursday with a letter criticizing us for our editorial, saying that the government is chilling speech by arresting critics of its handling of the deadly fire at the Wang Phuc Court housing complex. In the midst of all this, two of Jimmy Lai's children, Claire and Sebastian, appeared on Mornings with Maria on Fox News Wednesday. His daughter described details of his incarceration, such as the heat rash from the 100-degree temperatures in his un-air-conditioned cell in the summer, dramatic weight loss, and how his nails are turning colors. They are purplish-gray, and some of them are falling off. U.S. officials are working on Mr. Lai's case as part of the preparations for Mr. Trump's visit to China. We hope Mr. Trump reminds Mr. Xi that the only way he can take Mr. Lai off the table and prevent the press from publicly asking embarrassing questions is to release him well before President Trump arrives in Beijing. The Pepper and Salt cartoon shows a couple seated at a restaurant table sipping a cocktail. And she says, "I love your nearly imperceptible good qualities." Letters to the editor. Your dad deserves 24 socks. I agree with William J. Luther's admonition to give your father socks for Christmas, but he doesn't go far enough. Buy 24 identical ones instead. Socks get holes and disappear in the washing machine. If you give your father a large handful, he'll still have 23 socks left when one inevitably runs away, and never have to worry about wearing a mismatching combo again. From Mark J. Davis, Shreveport, Louisiana. You've been listening to a reading of articles and features from the December 8, 2025 issue of the Wall Street Journal. We read from the Wall Street Journal every Monday through Thursday at 11 p.m. Your reader has been Corrine. Thank you for listening.